You're listening to Reading Writers, a podcast on the joy of reading widely.
Hi, welcome to Reading Writers. I'm Aaron, and with me today is Ted Kluck. Ted has authored or co-authored over a dozen books, including Why We're Not Emergent. He's also done Why We Love the Church and a whole ton of other books, including a number of sports biographies, which is kind of cool. Ted's work has appeared on ESPN.com. It's in Sports Spectrum magazine, ESPN the magazine. He's also an assistant professor at Union University and lives in Jackson, Tennessee with his wife and sons. Ted, thanks for being on the show.
Aaron, good to be here, man.
Yeah, so we've given the professional bio. Can you fill in a little bit more of who Ted is as a person?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's been crazy, that's for sure, trying to make a living in this game over the last 15 years. But yeah, I really didn't grow up thinking about writing as a career. I was a football player. I was really heavy into that. Figured I would just play forever and then coach for whatever time was left. And really never thought about writing. I had a pretty serious injury in college as a football player, and then kind of had to take a look at my life, and the Lord, I think in his goodness and his mercy, uncovered some of the idolatry that I'd had for sports, and you know, showed me another way, which was a really great mercy, though painful at the time. So yeah, I started out actually doing sports satire with some friends from college. I had a publication called The Field Judge, satire for the discerning sports fan, that got picked up eventually by ESPN, and that was kind of the big break that opened up a lot of doors for book publishing. My first book came out in 2006. It was a book called Facing Tyson, where I interviewed 15 guys who fought Mike Tyson. So, and that gave me kind of the opportunity to do more in the sports space. And then when I did the books with Kevin DeYoung on the church, that sort of gave me the chance to move about and do some more books in the Christian writing space. So it's been a unique ride, a unique career. I love teaching. Started doing that 6 or 7 years ago and just discovered that I really loved the classroom. So it's a real blessing to be here at Union and really stoked to be able to grow this program.
Nice. And how long have you been at Union?
1 year.
One yeah, year, be, okay. So it's
I'll be starting
really
my
fresh.
Second school year here in the fall.
Yeah. Very cool, very cool. Yeah. What's been a highlight of that for you?
Oh man, there have been so many highlights. I mean, one, you know, just being here in Jackson, finding a great church. You know, we kind of immediately got plugged into a really good church down here that, you know, has just been a blessing to our family in terms of making friends and making the adjustment. But as far as teaching, you know, kind of having carte blanche, I think, to build a really, what I hope will be a really successful and exceptional writing program here, and kind of getting to do things my way in the classroom and try some creative things. And we've had some success with it here early on. We won some magazine awards here in the South, and that's been exciting for me and for the students. So, and I have a truly amazing group of students to work with who were in place when I got here. So, huge blessing.
Yeah, for sure. That's awesome.
Yeah,
It's nice to hear someone really excited about what's coming next in that space. So.
Indeed. I think people in this business, man, in academia, tend to get a little burned out and paranoid. So, Lord mm-hmm. willing, that won't happen to me.
Yeah, I hope not. I hope not, because I mean, Lord knows we need good writers and people who have a passion for it, learning how to do it well. So
indeed.
So speaking of that, you know, we've hinted at it a little bit with your biography and even how you kind of broke into writing, but you're one of the most diverse writers that I know of. I mean, you're not just in one genre, which is really cool, but you're doing some books that are for, you know, spiritual formation on the Christian side. You're doing books that are actually dealing with how Christians even relate to sports. You're also doing books that have nothing to do with the faith-based area whatsoever with some of the sports biographies. How did that happen? Is that just something that flowed out naturally from your interests, or is it something else?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to say that it was some intentional, you know, well-crafted plan, but it really wasn't. I mean, I think I tend to be a little bit of a hedonist in terms of how I live my life, which is both good and bad. But I think I've never read a book that I didn't want to read. And I think for the most part, I've never written a book that I didn't really want to write. So I think for a lot of years, it's just been chasing after ideas and people that I thought were interesting, you know, mm-hmm. and sometimes getting an opportunity to write about those things. And yeah, for me, that's sort of taken me back and forth between the world of sports and really like kind of some of the weird, unusual people or subcultures in sports. And then, you know, kind of back and forth to the church and Christian living and some of the things that interest me as a believer. So yeah, while I'd like to say that, I had some Bob Briner-esque plan to redeem the culture by being not just a Christian writer, like it really isn't that at all. I mean, it's really just a guy writing about what he wants to write about and having it somewhat work out. But that being said, I think being a believer has really seasoned my secular writing in the sense that it's pushed me to look for those things which are redemptive and which are, you know, beautiful in a Christian way and sort of challenged me to write about those things for a broader audience. And I think that's been really good for me. And I think, you know, the Lord gives different people different gifts or different callings. And, you know, for me, I've never been afraid to engage, you know, kind of large non-Christian populations. So I grew up in a public school and sort of moved about, you know, sports in a really secular way. So it's not scary for me to go into some of those environments and write about some of those people. So I think not everybody would be called to something like that, but you know, the Lord was gracious to let me write about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Now, I'll admit, I'm not much of a sports guy. I tend to be the guy on Twitter who's intentionally getting things wrong just to frustrate everyone who follows me.
Yeah, most of my friends are like you.
Oh, okay, so, fantastic. Fantastic. Yeah. What would be something that someone would get out of reading a sports biography? Think about maybe the most recent one that you did, or even the first one with Fighting Tyson.
Well, I have to admit that I'm not really a sports guy either, traditionally. I mean, I really love two sports. I love football and I love boxing, and really I could care less about any other sport. So we just sussed this out on the Happy Rant a couple of episodes ago, where I don't root for teams. I don't get emotional about sports other than, you know, just the stories of people inside the sport. And really, I think to your question, I mean, that's to me what somebody would get out of a book like Facing Tyson. You know, I've had people, you know, in the church or just friends or acquaintances come up to me and say, you know, I had no interest in boxing, but I loved your book because it's really manifestly about people and it's about where people come from and what motivates them and why they made the choices that they made. And I think if you're a Christian, you should be interested in people. You know, that sort of goes hand in hand with loving God's creation. But so there's that aspect of it. But I think just a really well-told story about a person, whether it's an athlete or a politician or a, you know, all these reform guys read like naval biographies, you know. So if I ever find myself on the water in a conflict, I hope that like Al Mohler is in the boat with me. I think he's read like every naval biography known to man. But anyway, really, those are stories about people, you know, and we're drawn to a well-crafted and well-told and entertaining story about people that invites us to relate and invites us to kind of see ourselves in the story, even if we don't care about boxing per se.
You described yourself as living kind of a hedonistic lifestyle in a certain sense. I'm guessing in a bit of that Piper-ish way.
I hope so, man. I think on the good days, on the bad days, probably in a much less edifying way. But yeah, continue.
Okay. Anyway, so what you mentioned as well was that that plays into your reading a little bit with you really haven't read a book that you didn't want to read.
Yeah.
Can you expand on that a little more? Because I mean, a lot of us, we almost always run into books where it's like you wish you never read it, or the ones you abandon, that kind of thing.
I mean, I hate that feeling, you know what I mean? I feel like I've wasted time, and I feel kind of personally offended if I sort of watch a movie or read a book that I end up not liking. So I try to avoid that as much as I can. And I think, you know, one of the character flaws that I bring into this whole thing is I'm really not a disciplined person. I've only ever been disciplined about one thing, and that was football and training for football. And I was maniacally disciplined about that. And when that didn't work out, I mean, that was sort of the the end of things that I was disciplined about. And now, I mean, as a Christian, I'm trying to, you know, you try in good faith to be disciplined at certain things. But yeah, reading is not one of those things, I can honestly say.
Okay.
I just read what I want, you know, and if that's a kind of pop biography of a rock star, then I read a bunch of those and you know, enjoy those. So sort of whatever I'm into at the time, that's kind of what I read. And I tend to read authors that represent the best of what I try to do on the page. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is going to sound cliche as a youngish, you know, writer, but I love David Foster Wallace. Started reading his nonfiction 12 or so years ago and loved it. Read Infinite Jest a couple of times. You know, to me, he represents just somebody who has mastery of the language. You know, somebody who's a complete master of the language, can be funny, can be poignant, can make you think, can essay, can make you laugh. So really, when I want to be fed as a writer, that's where I go. But even all the Wallacey stuff, I mean, I've always wanted to read that. You know, it's always been a desire that I've had. So yeah, I tend to kind of vacillate back and forth, I think, between, you know, I'll read a 1200 page book by David Foster Wallace, and then I'll read, like, I don't know, a biography of Walter Payton that came out in 1985 and sucked then, you know, but I'll just read it because I'm interested in him, you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's kind of this mixture of fun and edification there on the writing end. But yeah, right now, like, for example, right now I'm reading a book called The Book of Basketball by Bill Simmons.
Okay.
And Bill Simmons is sort of I don't know how much you know about Simmons, but being Canadian and then also being not a sports guy, probably not much, but
almost nothing.
Yeah, he's sort of a David Foster Wallace knockoff in the sports space, in that, you know, I see a lot of kind of Wallacey influences in his writing, but he writes in a really funny and fresh and interesting way, and a little analytical way about basketball, about the NBA, and it's just a really fun book to read. And sort of concurrent with that, I'm reading a book by a Pulitzer Prize winner, two-time Pulitzer Prize winner, about the economics of college football. So again, just kind of two things that I'm into and that I want to learn more about, you know, here in the moment.
Okay, cool. So along those same kind of lines, I mean, hopefully listeners are noticing that there's actually a lot of diversity there already. And I really like the fact that you're talking about, you know, basically pop biographies and stuff like this. So what is one of those that you've read and really enjoyed?
Yeah, man, I'll give you two, actually. One that I read and really enjoyed was a book called Open Up and Bleed. It's about Iggy Pop. So if you're interested in punk rock at all, Iggy Pop was a guy, grew up in Michigan, grew up in Ypsilanti, which was nearby where we were living at the time, and Iggy and the Stooges. So yeah, it was a huge influence on punk rock. So there was this book called Open Up and Bleed that was kind of his life story. But really, I think what drew me to it was the fact that, you know, I was interested in the guy at some level and interested somewhat in the music, though not a huge, huge fan. But I think what drew me to it was just the whole, like, punk rock ethos, you know, the idea that, you know, you're doing things as an artist that that exists sort of on a different level than just marketing or moving product or, you know, satisfying a label's requirements or whatever. And I think growing up in the 90s, kind of growing up with grunge, I had a little bit of that punk rock ethos inside of me. And as an artist, I think as a writer, you know, I've tried to embody that a little bit, where you go, I think at the end of the day, you go, you know, if my brand is going to work, if this is going to make it, I have to just be myself. You know, I have to be true to myself. I can't try to be, you know, like some other writer that's come before me. And I think that's something I really appreciated about the punk rock movement. So there was Open Up and Bleed, the Iggy Pop book. The other one that I read recently that really kind of threw me and blew my mind was a book by Jeff Perlman called Sweetness. It was about Walter Payton, again, an athlete. Payton was a running back for the Chicago Bears in the 80s as I was growing up. And really, when I was growing up in that kind of sweet spot where you're young and you're in grade school, and you're kind of worshiping athletes and worshiping the sport, and you don't really know everything that's behind it. But this was a long book. It was probably a 700 or 800 pager. And it really, in a sad way, kind of peeled back the curtain on Peyton's life and on what kind of a guy he actually was and some of his sin struggles. And it was sad. You know, it was sort of that feeling of seeing your childhood hero kind of unmasked. And I needed to read it. It was enjoyable because it was a walk down memory lane at some level, but it was also really sad. You know, it was one of those things where you put it down and you realize, like, I'm an adult here. You know, I'm a grown up. This is what it feels like to be a grown up. You know, you're realizing all these grown up things and all these sin struggles that your idol had when you were a kid. So those are two that I've really, really enjoyed.
Yeah. See, you wouldn't think about a pop biography all the time really allowing you an opportunity for deep introspection or yeah, things like that. But I mean, actually, one that was kind of like that for me recently was Everyone's Famous on the Internet Almost.
What a great title.
Yeah. Yeah. And the lady who wrote it, she's the writer and actor behind the Guild web series.
Okay.
I don't know if you watched that at all.
Uh-uh.
Okay. It was super fun for me, like, because this shows basically I would have been one of the guys that most of the jocks in school would have wanted to beat up. but it really lives in that world of online role-playing game folks. So, man. Yeah. So it's really
definitely beat you out back in the day.
Well, see, I'm too old for the online ones. So,
Oh, dude. So you were the guy in school, like running around in a cape, you know?
No capes for me. I was fashionably sad.
You were a fashionably sad guy?
I was fashionably sad guy. It was awesome. So,
oh, dude, that's outstanding. What did that look like for you?
Oh, man. It was scowling most of the time.
Yes. You had a lot in your mind. You were very deep and very angry.
You know it. Lots of black, of course.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I carry most of that today. I'm just slightly less grumpy now.
Dude, but you're a reform guy, so you can be grumpy now. You can be a crank and a curmudgeon, and it's part of the ethos of the movie, right?
Yeah, that's how they roll, right? So
you've landed in a perfect place for being like, you know, intentionally sad guy in school.
There we go. It's the dream. It's the dream. So
it's the dream. Exactly. Although you could white paper extensively about joy.
Absolutely.
Even though you have none in your actual life.
Well, sure. It's all theory anyway.
It's
right?
all like, theory. It's all theoretical joy.
Yeah, that's what bloggers do anyway, right? We just pretend like we know what we're talking about, but we don't actually live any of it.
That's it, man. I love it.
Oh, man, that's going to get me in trouble with someone.
That's okay, man. That's the risk you run on you know, when you're a media mogul like we are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm going to start. This is actually the beginning of my empire.
Yes.
You know, so I think I'm going to start a line of steaks next.
Dude, one day you too could have like lucrative $150 sponsors on your podcast. You know, that money will change your life.
Wow. Yeah, I know. I could buy like 3 cups of coffee in Nashville.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. 3 cups of hipster coffee in Nashville.
Yep. There we go. I could maybe pay the tax on a cup of on a cheap cup of coffee here in Canada.
Dude, absolutely. Yeah. That's it, man.
Yeah, so what I was impressed with this book was just the, again, it's so cliche, but actually a genuine willingness to be transparent about things like depression and anxiety and perfectionist issues and the damage that those things cause. So it was really cool to read this book and see, okay, this quirky, situationally recognizable person calling out these parts of her personality. And it's like, so reading that was like, that's actually really helpful for me because it's like, you know, I can notice some of that stuff in myself.
Dude, I think that's what good memoir does. You know? I mean, I think it invites you to connect. It invites you to see yourself in their experience. And I think, you know, bad memoir, you know, gets the rap of, oh, it's just a person like, you know, opening up a vein on the page or airing their dirty laundry or whatever. And it doesn't invite you inside of it. But yeah, what you're describing and a lot of the stuff that I'm drawn to, it really does invite you to make an important connection.
Yeah. And then there's, of course, just clever ones like Neil Patrick Harrison, whoever did the heavy lifting in the writing, his Choose Your Own Adventure style biography. Yeah, yeah. You know, like that's just funny. So.
It is. Absolutely.
All right. So when you're reading, you're pretty all over the place. When you're just like, okay, I just want to grab a book.
Yeah.
What's the first thing you would naturally gravitate to?
Dude, if I'm just going to grab a book, you know, like if I'm going on a trip and I need like something to read in the hotel room so I can relax and like come down at the end of the day, I'll usually grab, I don't know, some kind of sports book. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it would have to be about either a sport that I'm interested in, which again, per the earlier talk, is a pretty small number. So about a sport that I'm interested in or about a person that I find really intriguing. You know, fiction-wise, I have a few authors that I really like, a few kind of ideas that I like. But again, those books tend to be more literary and more challenging and a little bit less fun to like read on the beach or read on the airplane. So
okay.
So I tend to be a little bit more choosy with stuff like that and probably a little bit more pretentious.
So what's pretentious mean for you for that, though?
Yeah, so pretentious for me, I mean, it's a lot of the postmodern authors. So like, you know, Wallace, Don DeLillo. I really like Don DeLillo stuff. When I was in college, when I met my lady, she was like arty theater girl, like English girl, really literate. I was I'd just been injured, so I was like, you know, post football, like grunge guy or whatever. But she started giving me really great books to read. Like she turned me on to J.D. Salinger and I devoured all of his stuff. So I really like his stuff. I think Salinger was the first author that, you know, I realized that you could make a brand and have swagger and sound really cool on the page. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'd never really thought of writing in that way. And reading his stuff back in college with Kristen, it really kind of turned me on to what a writer could sound like. And it was cool. It struck me as really cool. So
I've never heard Salinger described as having swagger before.
Dude, yeah, Salinger was full of swagger, man. I mean, think about the guy. You know, he was such a, I don't know if he was a douche or if he was just antisocial or what, but like he just had no interest in sort of the, you know, the world of being a literary star, yeah. Which I find really cool. Again, I don't know if it's growing up in the 90s with like Nirvana and Pearl Jam and some of those influences, but like the reluctant star, the star who doesn't want to be a star, the star who's not interested in marketing, like that really, that whole vibe really appeals to me. And the fact that he wrote really well, the fact that he wrote well short, I mean, I think, you know, one of the curses that I have as a writer is that my sweet spot, like page count wise, is like 180 pages. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not a guy who likes to go forever on the page. And I really like Salinger for that reason. His books felt, I don't know, just really lean, like no sentence was wasted. You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure. For sure.
And I love that about his stuff.
Well, I mean, that's honestly, that's one of the things that how do I put this delicately? I really hate
you'd
about
say
most
you'd hate
books.
It.
Yeah, I hate yeah. about most books right now because yeah. the books that we write and the books that we publish, most of them don't need to be that long.
Dude, I could not agree more. Yeah. Seriously, I'm so glad you said that. And I'm so glad somebody's saying that. And I have to tell you, from the perspective of a writer inside the industry, that's all the industry. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Because they'll say, wow, you've written an amazing 93 pages, but we really need it to be 180 pages to sell. In this space, you know what I mean? In this genre. So they come back with all these things that you can expand and contract or whatever. And it's, yeah, you begin to feel like, I don't know, like you're a boy band, like NSYNC, just making some like a thing for the label that they know is going to sell. But yeah, I really love that you said that. And I'm glad we're in agreement on that.
Oh, for sure. I mean, my first two books, they were both in the 100 page realm.
Yeah.
So, and that's actually the publisher that I went, that I did those through. That's kind of their whole deal is it's all books that are in that, you know, anywhere between 100 and 120 pages, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And that's nice, man. It's nice. Somebody's doing that.
Oh, it's killer. It's killer. It's so good. I have been happy to see a few of the larger publishers starting to take a chance and start getting back into 128 page books here and
right.
there. But yep. it seems to be only certain guys that they'll do that with, like Kevin DeYoung. So
yeah. Who writes a 128 page book before breakfast? I mean, let's be honest.
You can yeah. And then there's Jared Wilson, who's another guy who's just like
who tweets 158 pages before breakfast.
Totally, right? Totally. Yeah. And I mean, he's
prolific kinda, in a different way.
Exactly. But he's an interesting guy in that.
Is he funny or is he just allegedly funny? You know what I mean?
He's funny.
Okay.
So what I like about Jared is you can tell that he really loves words, and you can tell he wants to make every sentence matter and yeah. feel like it's important. And
yeah.
so,
oh, that's huge, man. That's
oh yeah,
so huge.
Totally.
I love that.
Totally. But I mean, I get that same kind of vibe from on the fiction side. I get that from Nick Hornby too.
I love yeah. Nick Hornby.
Yeah. That's so good. Like High Fidelity is just killer for me.
Oh yeah, I love it. Love it.
Yeah. And just the fact that, you know, even if you, cause actually my introduction to that was actually through the John Cusack movie.
And, oh yeah.
And so what was neat was to read the book after seeing the movie and see how well they actually translated it. And it's one of yeah. the few that it's like, this is really well done.
Dude, right. Another one like that for me is Legends of the Fall. If you've seen the movie Legends of the Fall, which is one of my favorite movies of all time, just so epic and sad. But the book was another, you're going to like this because it's a short book, but a guy named Jim Harrison, a Michigan author, really, really good writer, has won a bunch of awards and received a bunch of acclaim in Michigan. But I think Legends of the Fall was kind of his big, you know, outside the upper Midwest kind of title. But yeah, but the book is like 90 pages, you know, it's really short.
Nice.
But then they just open it up into this really beautiful story for the screen. So that's one that really worked that way too. And I had the same experience with High Fidelity where I saw the movie, loved the movie, and then read the book.
Yeah. Awesome. I think, you know, I think that's probably actually a good place for us to wrap
okay.
for this one. So Ted, thanks so much for being on the show. This has been really great. It's been huge to talk about books and, you know, you give me some ideas for some people to actually look up in terms of biographies and stuff like that. Hopefully the listeners will as well, because that would be good for them. And listeners, you can find links to the books that we've talked about today in the show notes. I'd say follow Ted on Twitter or Facebook, but he doesn't do those things. So
no, I hate those things.
You hate those things.
Yeah.
Why? Tell me why.
Just because, well, I mean, this is a longer conversation probably, but I think I know my own heart and my own sin issues enough to know that it would be bad for me to be on those things.
Oh, okay.
So, just in a seeking other people's approval sort of way.
Oh, okay. There you go.
So yeah, and also I just don't like being on them. Mm-hmm. The short time that I was on Facebook, I really like the real people in my life so much better now that I'm not on Facebook. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a good thing all the way around for me to not be on there. But they could go to my website, which is a really old timey thing to have.
There you go.
If they want to get really old school, they could go to tedkluck.com and look at all the old timey stuff that I have there.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So listeners, go to tedkluck.com. And also, if you're not already listening to it, you really should. Listen to the Happy Rant podcast, which Ted co-hosts with Ronnie Martin and Barnabas Piper. By the way, I gotta say, how do we convince you to change your theme music again?
Oh, really? You want it to go back to the old like Altrogi Wantanat music?
No, something else. Just
you don't like the kind of Super Nintendo riff that we have on the front end of that thing, huh?
No, it's messed up, man. It's freaking me out. So
now that's a little bit of Ronnie Martin magic right there. I don't know if you knew that, but Ronnie's band was Joy Electric, and he was sort of known for making that kind of music back in the day. So that's a little original Ronnie Martin.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Well, I mean, just remember, like I said, I was fashionably sad kid. So everything
Dude,
was super dark and moody.
Rock, man, we got to play some like Smiths or something really sad for you there on the front end.
I think so. So
yeah, I'll see what I can do.
All right, cool, man. All right, so but if you're not listening to the Happy Rant podcast, do and follow them on Twitter at Happy Rant Pod. Ted, thanks again for being on the show and for the extra little bit of discussion in the outro.
Man, thanks so much. I really enjoyed it. It was fun.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Reading Writers Podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving a review and a rating on iTunes. Your reviews help other people find the show. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/AaronStrongarm. You can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/bloggingtheologically. And for more content, please visit bloggingtheologically.com. I'm Aaron Armstrong, and I'll be back next week with a new episode of Reading Writers.